Mr. Douglas Reel 10. You were just talking about the competition.
I wish I could remember the name of that place. It's on my tongue end and all, you know. Where was that place? March. Yeah. Because I got a leave from there. I couldn't get back. I came up here and there was a tremendous snowstorm. In fact, I had to walk. I didn't have to walk, but I got off the train at Ferry Hill. The train was stuck. And it was a woman, and the baby cried and cried. The baby was hungry, and there was nothing on the train. There was no milk to give it. And I couldn't stand. I said, I can't. And I got off the train, and I walked along the track to Durham, and then I walked from Durham home. And that was a bit of a, you believe me, a full marching order, you know. Kit. That your own determination, rifle, everything. It's quite an achievement. And I remember I come up to Durham and I got up to that pub at the top of the hill, Garden House. There was a great big lorry, huge thing. And he said to me, the driver, says, is that train? Are you getting off the train? He says, that train? I says, I've got off the train. He says, is it in? I says, no, it's not. I says, I got off at Ferran Hill. I says, they're trying to get it through. But he said, I've got food for them. I says, well, will you give me some? I said, I've been on the train. I'm entitled some. Oh, no, he couldn't. He says, no, I can't give you any food. So I was coming back, and I got to halfway between Durham and Sacriston, and the snow was very, very, very deep. And there was this fella standing. Sergeant, he says, would you say that this car's mobilised? I says, what car? What car? Oh, he says, it's here, under the snow. Well, I says, if that's not mobilised, because apparently if a car wasn't immobilised, you could be in trouble. I says, of course, it's immobilised. He said, well, come over and have a drink at the table with me. And he took us up this road. And, say yet. And the woman, his wife, she gave me a huge feed of bacon and bread, and scones. Oh, what a feed he gave me, that man. And then turned out he was the mayor of Durham. He was the mayor of Durham. And that set me up then. I got away, I marched through Sacklesen. It was heavy going though. Look at the snow. Once you got into the town, it wouldn't have mattered. The roads, to tend to try and keep them clear. But I remember got as far as the Black House. And I went in there and I got a double room. And I said, that's it. Keep us going till I get this. And I got to the bottom here, what do you call the middles, Bloemfontein, and you could cut up then, straight up, you know, there wasn't any road or anything like that. And I remember getting about 100 yards, and I was up to here in snow, and I said, I'm not going to make it. Tired, really tired. And I said, if I stop here, I'll freeze to death. I said, I'll just go to sleep and I'll be glad. Fought my way back, and I got back on the road, and I came around by the moor, South Moor. And eventually got home, and the snow was up. You could just see 2 or 3 inches at the top of the windows. The snow was very, very deep. And I remember knocking on the window, and she came, and I fell in the door with her. A lot of snow, and I couldn't go. I went to the police because they were like, the snow just didn't go away, it got worse. And so I went to the police and said, I cannot get back, there's no buses, there's no nothing. So he said, oh yeah, but we'll ring your unit like and explain. So I've got an extra week for the buses start, they could get through to the Newcastle to the station for the trains. And when I went back, they wouldn't believe us, you know, because they had lovely fine weather there. And they wouldn't believe me, and I said, I'd stopped with the snow. Because, as I say, there were a lot of them were South Country people that never didn't get heavy snowstorms where they'd come from. And then from there, we went on to airfield defence. Airfield, garden airfields, middle of the country, and, we're in bell tents there, and I remember the guard tent, it must have been built on a latrine, some of the troops that had been there prior, I don't know, but earwigs, awful lot of earwigs, and they used to climb up the pole, you know, close to the top, and if you bumped the pole, come down on you. And of course, that's the only time I think the British Army's ever done it. We've got an official issue of cotton wool to put in our ears, because earwigs, you know, they get into holes and would crawl in your ears. But you used to get into bed with just your palliasse and your blanket on the ground, and you wouldn't be in 5 minutes, and then you'd feel them crawling all over you. Horrible at first. I thought, I'll go mad. But you can get used to anything through time. Yeah, well, day, what could you do? You couldn't run away from them. They were there, and that was it. And the first finish, you'd be nipping them, getting them, but there was billions of them. And to finish, you just went to sleep.
So how long did this go on for? How long were you doing these airfield defence? This is with the 16th,
did that for about a month, eh? And I saw some terrible, terrible things there. The aircraft, the bombers. Always the rear gunner shot the pieces. And I saw one or two crashes coming in, planes damaged. There was one that went and wrapped itself around a tree. You saw some nasty accidents there.
Can you remember the name of the airfield? Can you remember the name of the airfield?
It wasn't an official, but it was in Lincoln. I remember it was a pub. The thing I remember as much as anything was this pub called the Goat. The Goat, where they used to, you go there for a drink, you know, after duty, and that's all there really was in the area.
What did your duties consist of then? What were you doing during the day?
Guarding the air rooms, patrolling around the perimeters in case of sabotage or anything like that. We didn't have any air raids there. Which they might have done, because it was a bomber base, really.
What kind of planes? What kind of bombers?
Whether it be Lancasters and Wellingtons. I think there were some Americans there, and all. No, there couldn't have been. No, there couldn't have been Americans. Not as early as that in the war. Most of them would be Lancasters and Wellingtons, but it was half the planes that came back, the rear gunner was shot, because apparently they took him out first, and then they could approach the plane from nearly anywhere, and their fighters, like. But later on, they got planes, of course, that they had. Had guns all around, they got top turret, bottom turret, rear gunner, and front gunners, and that. But those planes were pretty vulnerable to a good fighter. Nearly everyone that came back was damaged somewhere or other. And some didn't come back, like, you know, I suppose. Because we had nothing to do with the planes, we were just guarding the perimeter. It was just a special medal for that, really. A defense medal. And then from there we went to Rye.
Is this the whole battalion?
Oh, yes, yes, And where the whole brigade was stationed in that area. But still, there was 151. No, what was it?
You were with the 16th by this time. You were with the 16th by this time.
16th battalion. Yeah.
Which brigade were they in? Can you remember?
I'm trying to remember the sign. I can't remember.
So where did you go from there? To Rye, you say? You went to Rye. You went to Rye after that.
But I remember, I was going to tell you before, when I went to March, I had one man in my platoon. He's always warning me. Useless, ignorant, hopeless man. He never met a soldier or anything else. You know. He used to be sick in his helmet, piddling his helmet, and I used to get rid of him by any means I could, you know, put him on latrine duty, you know, anything to keep, because he was, and anyway, I had this in the platoon competition, and I had to take him, like, you know, I tried, I couldn't get rid of him. So it was a forced march of so many miles, and you had to ford a canal, and then you had to get on, you had to fire 5 rounds or 10 rounds, I'm not sure. And anyway, there was several things to be done, and it ended up with a marching on the square. And I hadn't been there all that long, like, and of course, with them being heavy infantry, they taught the lads the commands. When the command on the light infantry comes on a different foot, and I was given the command on the wrong foot, and the company commander Balance, they call him, Captain Balance, he tore a strip off me. He says, yeah, top marks and everything, your platoon. He says, the company would have been upset. He says, you fell down on the drill. And I hadn't realised what it was, you know, until the drill period was nearly finished. I was given the command on the wrong foot, and then I realised, and then of course they were smart. I had a good tunes, but that was it. I lost it on the drill, and he played hell. He went his ends, because it was the best platoon in the company, like, you know. I remember that. I got a strip torn off us there. We were in very old houses there. I used to sit and watch the mice ridden, very old property was. I don't know, people live like that, but people, of course, there were billets, you know, people have been moved out. A lot of mice. I used to sit and amuse myself watching the mice, put a bit of bread down, and we fight all, you know, vicious little things, mice. I didn't realise that they would fight like mad over a few crumbs.
Can you remember when you went to Rye? Can you remember when this was?
It was in the summer of 43, I think it would be. It was just before the Pearl Harbor. We were there when Pearl Harbor was attacked. We were there about 2 or 3 months before Pearl Harbor. And we were guarding then again the coast. It was Martello Towers there and that, and but I think they had some sort of radar installation, and I think we were there. We've got an inkling about that. No, nothing sure, but Winchelsea. We were stationed in Winchelsea. Our battalion, the whole brigade would be there, at least. And I remember there I got into trouble through. We'd been out on the march. I came back, and men's in tents, and to get them red guns set up. A proper mountain for them, you know, for aircraft. Because aircraft come across there fairly regularly. Because I remember they're telling you when I went on that platoon thing, Messerschmitt came and I stopped and got them the fire, you know, what they call aircraft drill. And this terrible soldier, he, of course, cute as a bloody monkey. I just left him. I thought, no good, I'm going to be a man short. Left him, because he couldn't keep up, he wasn't fit or anything else. But he was there at the finish. He got a lift. He thumbed the lift. And I ended up with a purple platoon. Oh, that man, I can't remember his name, but I was one like that in another regiment. Dirty, scrubby, useless sort of. He was a likeable sort of fella, you know, drunk every night, like, you know.
So what were the rest of the men like that had formed the 16th Battalion? Recruits, were they? All conscripts?
Yep. Most of them were, yes.
And from what sort of areas were they from?
All over the country.
They weren't just Durham men. They were from all over the country.
All over. There was from Staffordshire, Lincoln, London, Yorkshire, all over the country. They were just conscripts. But they fitted in very well.
What about training? How did you train them?
Well, they had a pretty stiff training program. We had to. We knew then that we had to take the Germans on eventually, and we had to be ready for them. So the training was pretty severe.
What about physical training? How did you get them fit?
Hmm?
What about physical training? How did you get them fit?
Physical, well, yeah. Of course you had your PT in the morning, you know, and route marches, forced marches. You couldn't always get away, of course. You had your duties at the coast, of course, digging and one thing and another. But by then, the fear of invasion had gone. You know, it was so. It wasn't so much for all were on the coast. It wasn't so much looking for, but you still had to keep an eye out for perhaps a patrol. You know. A submarine coming in a German patrol landing and looking. So we had a lot of night work, you know, the guard duties, and we patrolled the beaches and keep quiet, sort of thing. Learn the men to keep quiet. And a lot of night work. We did an awful lot of night attack work, like, just in case any of them did land. You know, there was always a chance. I don't know whether we never ever caught anybody, but there was always a chance that they could come in at night. You know, perhaps from a submarine or a patrol boat or something like that. So we had to be on our toes, like. And the officers ended. There was one very very keen officer. Got himself blacked up and dressed as a German sort of thing. and come creeping just to see if you're on your toes. It's a wonder he didn't get a beant in him or shot that officer. It's a wonder. But he was a very keen officer, Captain Clark. And I tell you, that was the one when and I set them the brain guns up, and he was a massive smut flung. He wasn't a couple hundred feet up. And of course, there was no fire, but there wasn't around. And I come and I said, what the hell's happened? Why? I says, what's the matter? Why didn't you open up? I'm not bloody. Oh, he said, Captain, come, said, well, take the guns down. Of course, I had to strip off them, and I said, bloody cat, I said, took them down, and of course, he heard us, he'd been somewhere around the wood, and I was up in front of the battalion commander for sort of, I don't know what the charge really was, but it was putting an officer sort of down, you know, superior officer. So I thought, well, I can tell the bloody truth, but he's going to be the trouble, because the battalion commander was a real old war horse. Tim,
do you remember who it was?
Old war horse, old Tim. I forget names. I can't remember names. In the RSM, he was a good, real old, good old soldier, you know. But I knew when I went in front, I said, "No. If I tell the truth here, there's going to be, I might get away with it." And of course, he said, "I can't understand you, Sergeant." He says, "You've got a wonderful record here. You've got a tremendous report." I'd been to 12 course school then, twice I was away, training these RSC people, that they were not non-combatants, that they were soldiers. And we were coming down to them hard, poor buggers. We one day took our attack, died. He was a quartermaster officer, and it's the first thing was up this hill for breakfast, up and out and up this hill, and you had to really, really come down on them, you know, hard. I remember, you know, I'll teach you how to crawl, and of course, 2 inches of frost on the bottom. Just in fatigues, you know, not proper uniform, your battle fatigues. And get on, and you could see the disbelief in their eyes. Get on the ground, like, you freeze to the ground, sort of thing. You know, but they were down. And of course, we were allowed 5% casualties, real ammunition. Teach them to crawl. I said, if you get your ass up, you get a bullet through it. It's the only way, you know, they were loud and they were firing machine guns just inches above your head.
This was while you were training, the 12 corps training.
This was before I went to, it was before, or while I was with the unit. I think it was before I went to the 60s, I'm not sure, I know, get mixed up with it. But they had to be taught to fight, to aim, to load rifles, be able to, if they were attacked, to defend their wagons and that. Because, as I say, they hadn't. And
you'd had the experience of them in France,
hadn't
you?
It was, well, I was there when Monty came out. When he asked us, he said, "You weren't in France, Sergeant?" "Well, yes," I said. And he said to me, he said, "Well, do you want to go back?" That was when I was at that course, teaching them. I remember that time. And I got a tremendous report. as I say, when I went in front of the pretend, he said, "You can't understand, you don't listen." I just kept my mouth shut. He says, "You could be demoted." I mean, if he'd said I was going to be demoted, but he transferred us to another company. I went to C company. I was in D company, Captain Clark, and he transfers to C company. So I didn't get any demotion or anything. But the point was, he was a keen officer, but I can't understand why he took those guns down, because we were in an area where there was a tremendous amount of aircraft activity, you know, that used to fly over Messerschmitts. And that one was a sitting, if them guns had been there, three Bren guns set, he'd bound to be hit. Bound to have been hit, but I went mad, went my nuts. But I didn't jump. That too little. I would have been in trouble.
Just going back then, you mentioned there that you were training with the 12th Corps training. How were you selected for that? How were you selected to go on the course and do this training?
I don't know. Just sent there.
How long were you there for?
I don't know. Three months, something like that. I can't remember. Because there were...
Were you training raw recruits? Were you training recruits?
No, they weren't. Well, yes, recruits. But there a lot of it was... The NCOs and the officers, they were the ones, the officers. Because we had that, we're told, we had that authority, and they were told, you're superior, but you obey their men. There was Sergeant Rasmussen, there was me, there was about a dozen of us. And we had to teach them, the officers, of course, then the officer could pass it on to the men, sort of. But it was a funny situation. But they had, you know, when you were tearing a ship off a very full captain.
Where was this at? What was the camp?
Somewhere near Tunbridge Wells, it was somewhere in that area. I cannot exactly, because out away in it was in that area, Tunbridge. In the area of Tunbridge, Kent, the Kent that.
What sort of camp was it? Can you remember?
Just like they took a hall over, and they had that huts, you know, huts where they were. Because I remember we had a hut for the Sergeant's Mess. And we had to teach officers how to be soldiers. That's top and bottom. It wasn't an easy task in a way, because they were superior. And they've got that you're a good disciplinarian. You've got that feeling that. But they were warned, of course, and they had to do what we said.
What other sorts of training did you do with the officers?
Well, as I say, more or less what we were done with ordinary recruits, up in the morning, get them fit, that was a thing, you know. And mind you, they took it badly, because they were just used to sitting on their backsides riding out in lorries. They didn't need marching, and it was hard for them. Very, very hard. And of course, they hadn't a clue with rifles. And when they fired them, you know, you showed them how they used to clean them out with boiling water and clean, dry, and slightly oiled. And then you would sort of parade afterwards, rifle parade. Look at them. These rivals aren't dirty, they're bloody filthy. He'll be back here on parade in 2 hours' time with a clean rival. This is the thing that had to be taught. They couldn't get away with nothing, you know. They had to be taught to be soldiers. And they were taught. And that's where the new army came from. You see, the high command changed the whole attitude then towards everybody. Everybody was a fighting man. Everybody. Doesn't matter whether he was a latrine carrier or...